Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the Limited Magic the Gathering debate podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, a.k.a. G-Guards.
And I'm Carl Chase, a.k.a. Two Duck Cubed.
Huge thank you to our patrons. If you'd like to support the show and listen to the monthly bonus mini-episodes, and there's a new one for May, check out patreon.com/mysticaldispute.
Garrett, today we are going to talk about Skycrier, but really, we are going to talk about the first several days of Streets of New Capenna format, and I think there is plenty to discuss.
And can I start off the discussion about Skycrier by talking about the community's emotional reaction to the Streets of New Capenna so far? One could even say there's a little bit of crying going on. And to be clear, I'm not pretending I'm not crying myself about my poor, poor win rate. Still, I really do think this is going to be a very cool and deep format to figure out.
I mean, you don't think the format is solved by now? It's 4 days.
That's true.
What is this, 2016, Garrett? We have 17 lands now. It's all completely solved. Yep, the data tells the entire story. Nothing else to talk about. We might as well not even have a podcast. So that about wraps it up.
Yeah, that about wraps it up. So thanks. No. This feels like a very complex format to me. There's some bombs. We feel a certain way about those. But there's so much going on with fixing and synergy that I feel like we've got a pretty interesting format on our hands.
No question. I think contrary to Jarl's opening take there on the format being solved, there's a lot going on, a lot to explore, and I'm ready to dig in.
All right. So Skycrier is one in a white for a 1/1 bird citizen. It has flying and lifelink and an activated ability. Three in a white, you and target opponent each draw a card.
It is an option of an ability that you can use when this card is in play.
Well, I think the best way to start talking about this card is to just see what the early data says. Let's go right into
Data Crunch.
What is the 17 lands performance data saying about Skycrier, Carl?
So first and foremost, you can't talk about the results on Skycrier without talking about some of the color-based results early in the format.
Sure.
And largely what those are saying is that white is performing really well. On top of that, it's also saying that two color decks with splashes, three color decks are all very viable options in the format as well. More or less, when white is in the mix, the color combinations are doing well. Azorius and Selesnya are both the highest performing two color combinations without a splash. White decks are among the better performing decks when there is two colors and a splash, and Bant, aka Brokers, aka Blue White Green, is by far the best three color combination of decks, coming in at 60% win rate with almost double the number of total games played of any other combination. Cabaretti or Naya is 55%, Grixis or Maestros is 55.7%, Esper or Obscura is 55.2%, and Jund or Riveters is clocking in at 52.1%. So three right in the middle, Jund at the bottom, and Bant way up top in terms of win rate. That's a big, big win rate disparity, even this early in the format.
All right, I grilled you about this privately on Twitter, basically, for the past 4 days. But one of the things that I noticed about this data, in addition to it just being 4 days of data, is that the two-color pairs are doing much better, yes, but they have a significantly smaller sample size. So in general, do you think that means that two color pairs are performing better just because it means that those colors are probably way more open to enable these two color decks? Because there's a lot of common slots taken up by fixing lands and the five tricolor commons. So it's going to be a little bit harder, right, to construct a two color deck.
Well, first, let's give folks exactly what we're talking about when we say that. From 17 lands data, two color decks have about 18,000 games played so far. Two color plus splash is 23,000. Three color decks are 88,000 so far. So double the combination of two color and two color plus splash. And then there's another 19,000 coming in at three color plus splash. So significantly more games at three color, but the win rate for pure two color decks is 58.3%. Two color plus splash, 56.7. Three color, 56.1. So I know there's a lot of stats kind of reeled off there right in a row, but I do think it's important backdrop for what we're talking about here. I think what you're seeing, Garrett, people are only playing pure two colors when those two colors are really wide open.
Yeah.
It's a three color format. There's a lot of fixing. There's a lot of gold cards. So it's hard to build a two color deck, at least well, unless it's pretty wide open. If there was a way to adjust for the openness of the draft, I'm sure that those win rates would compress down quite a bit.
PJ Trick actually mentioned this to me, this corollary, but Mono Black in Neon Dynasty performed extraordinarily well because, of course, you're only going to play that if black is the most open it's ever been. And I don't think that's exactly what's happening here, but it's somewhere on that ballpark, right?
For sure.
So you just have to take that into account when you're looking at these stats. I think it's going to be something to keep in mind throughout the life of this format on 17 lands. But I still think that 17 lands has a lot to say, especially about how well their color triplets and the color pairs are performing in relation to each other.
And I also think that I'm going to make a comment about absorbing takes on Twitter, which I know is something near and dear to your heart. But if you see someone saying, hey, you've got to be two color decks in this format, or like in Neon Dynasty, hey, mono red is the way to go, it's very likely that if you're reading that person's take on Twitter and they're a really good player, they're also really, really good at identifying when that lane is open.
Right.
And so you're going to just have situations where people are like, well, two colors the best, or you know, mono color is the best in this format or whatever. But in reality, the reason that they're able to do that is because they are very good at identifying when that particular color pair is open. And quite frankly, if you are not, you might not have the same amount of success with that mono color deck or your two color deck in the three color format. It's a skill that you've got to get good at and a skill you've got to identify before that can always work. There is absolutely no shame in just going where the format says to go with the three color decks. I mean, we're not talking about 5 points of win rate disparity here. We're talking about a couple of points and probably would be less if we were able to adjust for the openness of that draft data.
Either way, I really just want to drive home the point that these observations tell us something about how this format is balanced in the beginning, but draft is self-correcting. And I think the meta will shift as the format matures. And I'm excited to see where it's going to go, because with formats like this, where you can just like splash anything, I feel like there's going to be lots of weird nooks and crannies that people are going to figure out with this format. So I'm really excited to see where it ends up going. But all that being said, it looks like white is really good, which is kind of a first in a long time.
We probably know for a fact at this point, using history as our guide, that white and Bant in particular brokers are going to end up as the highest win rate colors. But I'd be pretty confident that the win rates are going to compress. You're not going to see a 5-point gap between brokers and all the other families by the time the format's over. That's pretty unlikely. My early take is it's not quite as complicated to build as some of the other decks. Whereas if you're building Maestros or you're building Riveters, there's a lot of sub-synergies to pay attention to.
Well, we've talked a lot about the general stats. We're spending a little extra time on data crunches because the early data is so interesting. But what about Skycrier specifically?
Right now, Skycrier is coming in as the 5th best white common and the 19th best common overall. I had a 57.9% game in hand win rate. And that's behind Inspiring Overseer, or Fiends Informant, Gathering Frong, and Backup Agent in white. So really doing quite well. Of note, the improvement when drawn is only 0.7 points, which probably indicates that it's along for the ride in a bunch of otherwise strong decks.
And you compare its 57.9% to the format average of 55.9%, which is a pretty significant bump up. At number five, it's, I have to say, a lot higher than I thought it was going to be, being basically a 2-mana 1/1 flying lifelink. I did not expect this card to be among the better commons, I guess. It's just not where I expected a card that looks this weak to perform.
I think there's a lot of kind of hidden reasons why this card is pretty solid in this format, but we can get into that a little bit further later in the episode. How about we move into
Pulse Check. Yeah, where is the community rating this card? And I'm looking here on the ALSA data, the average last seen at on 17 lands, which has Skycrier at 5.65, making it the 8th most picked white common and kind of middle of the pack in terms of the commons overall. So people are taking it higher than I guess I would have expected, but still lower than where it's performing, it seems.
I mean, to be honest, it's probably pretty close to where it's performing, because while Skycrier is the 5th best white common, there's a bunch of cards cards right in the vicinity of it in terms of win rate right now. So, I mean, it's more or less being picked at the appropriate spot for the win rate that it's providing.
It feels like much of the Magic community has decided that the Bant or Brokers colors are performing extra, extra well and are dominating this format, which could be why Skycrier is getting a boost. But there has to be something synergistic going on to make this card not terrible, I have to say. Do you want to discuss that and maybe debate it a little bit?
Let's do it, Garrett.
Debate it.
I guess I'll start. I know that I'm the resident curmudgeon and skeptic, but generally, I shy away from creatures that have one power, one toughness, especially if they're not one drops. And this is significantly two mana. The baseline that I compared Skycrier to was Ghastly Gloomhunter from Zendikar Rising, which was one in a black for a 1-1 lifelink flying, but it also had Kicker for 3 in a black, which made it a 3-3. And that was a format that really, really wanted life gain triggers, and that card still was just fine at best, I think. All of that to say, the stats on the card combined with the lack of life gain synergy and its super weird ability did not look very enticing to me.
So Garrett, this is definitely a card that I'm playing because it's a 1-1 flying lifelinker. You can't ignore the ability that it has. It is relevant. It's not a huge difference maker. Like, I would not be surprised. Like, if the ability on this card didn't exist, maybe it's worth a point or two in terms of win rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason that you play this card is if you want a 1-1 flying lifelinker.
Right, yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit more, actually. That ability reads as mostly flavor text to me because it's just such a bad thing for you to spend your own mana on because you're both getting that card. I can see, like, edge case scenarios where it'll be good, but like for the most part you really don't want to be activating that almost ever. It's almost like this tavern swindler ability where you only want to flip the coin in dire circumstances.
I'd push back on you a little bit there, because on any creature, if once you can get over a certain hump of like, are there situations where you'd play a 1-1 flying lifelinker with no other text? I think there are situations where you would do that.
Yeah.
Then having the additional optionality is only upside, even if you activate it rarely. If you want to get into real edge cases, you could talk about, okay, are there ways to break the symmetry on this and make it an ability that you don't mind activating? I've got a few situations or ways to do that. This is all minor. We're talking about probably tenths of a point within the point or two difference about having this ability. But number one, if you have a lower curve than your opponent does, you're just going to have more ways to like use those extra cards that you're getting immediately. Another way to break that synergy is you do it at the end of your opponent's turn when they're tapped out. And because the 1-1 flying lifelinker often helps you stay ahead in the race. And then the other hidden ability that this thing has, if you have a long game that's just going and there's some amount of board stall, nobody's able to push to the end, and your opponent has less cards in library than you, this can actually be a win condition.
Absolutely. But I have one thing that I want to push back on you with. I would be willing to bet that more than 50% of the time that this is activated on Magic Arena, it is a mistake by the player who activated it. Because it's easy to see, oh, I want to draw a card and forget that you're spending your own resources, but then your opponent draws an unknown card. And I totally see the reasons that you say, like, low curve, maybe milling them out. There's a lot of ways that a really experienced player can take advantage of an ability like this. But I think that most of the time on most board states, it's actually more correct to just ignore this ability altogether.
Yeah, I mean, roughly half the time it's both players drawing a card is going to be good for you, and half the time it's going to be good for them, and you're the one that has to spend the mana.
Right, simple as that.
So I totally agree that less than 50% of the time, it's going to be the right call to activate it. One that I forgot to mention on breaking the synergy is if you have a ton of the sac lands and you're able to thin your deck a lot, your card quality could be higher than your opponent's. Again, we're talking about tiny edges there, but I do think it's relevant.
I mean, I think it's wrong to say that it's completely flavor text. I just think that most of the time you should ignore it.
Oh, and yet one more
spot
where you can break the synergy on this, and that is Fairy Vandal.
Right. The blue 1/2 uncommon that grows whenever you draw your second card. So that ability can make the Vandal bigger. I got you. So with the ability ability aside, though, we both agree, I think, that the main reason you're playing this card is because it's a 2-mana 1/1 flying lifelink. And there are ways to take advantage of that in this format. And again, as the resident skeptic, I think that it's going to take a particularly difficult set of circumstances for me to actively want to draft this highly or at all, really, and put it in my deck. Because a 2-mana 1/1 flying lifelink, just, it's not quite worth a card or a slot in my deck, in my opinion. And building around it is essential to make it playable. So, Carl, how are you building around it?
So when I see the word lifelink, all I think is race breaker.
Yeah.
And actually, lifelink is kind of similar to double strike in some sense, in that it doubles the effect of your pump spells in different ways, obviously. But now your pump spells are both gaining you life and dealing extra damage. Fairly basic point, but those are the things going through my head. And in particular, flying is also to some extent a race breaker, because if you can come up the ground, you continue to get damage on top. So flying lifelink is the perfect combination of words to help you win a race. And there are a lot of ways to pump. There's +1/+1 counters, and the most obvious one is just backup agents, the 2-mana 1/1 that puts a +1/+1 counter on something when it comes into play. But there's plenty of other really solid pump in the format as well. You have For the Family at green, which is either +2/+2 or sometimes +4/+4. You've got Majestic Metamorphosis, which is kind of like Suit Up from Neon Dynasty, but it's 3-mana, makes a creature an artifact, 4/4 flying angel. You've got Luxurious Libation in green, which is X and a green, and it gives a creature +X/+X and makes a citizen. You've also got Quick Draw Dagger. If you're playing Cabaretti, you've got Antagonize, which is +4/+3 for 2-mana. And there's also Rafine's Guidance, which is a 1-mana aura that gives +1/+1, but also has the ability if you can play it for 3-mana from your graveyard. There's just a ton of ways to make this card bigger, and it makes it very difficult to race with a pumped up flying lifelinker.
My hesitation with one power creatures is that they cannot usually trade off with an opponent's creature. So they have to be doing something very relevant, or they have to, as you said, be augmented in some way to get to that 2 power. The jump from 1 to 2 is huge. People tend to avoid X1s for this exact reason, because tokens and ping effects are generally a bit free in Modern Limited. So for me, I don't want to play Skycrier unless I can for sure give it that 2 power. Now, I'd get that the lifelink puts you on this racing clock a little bit, but that's just such a slow burn that I don't think it justifies its slot in your deck. So I'm willing to see your argument that it's good if you can augment it, but I want a lot of ways to augment it, because the fail case of Skycrier just being on the battlefield alone feels like it's going to lose you a lot of games without that augmentation.
Agreed. It's not a card that I want to put in my deck if I've got no way to augment it.
Yeah.
Pure and simple.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is I want a lot of ways to augment it. I don't want like one or two that I hope that I draw in conjunction with it. I really need to make sure that it's going to be relevant. And there are a lot of commons that can do that, so that does add up, but I do not think that you should be just throwing this in your deck.
Agreed. I also don't know if I've had a ton of white decks that haven't had ways to augment it yet, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
But like, to the extent that I don't have it, it's out. And I've still cut it like in other spots too. I don't think it's an auto include. It's going to be very context dependent in the deck. I mean, I think there's going to be some decks where it's almost literally an all-star. I mean, if you've got like multiple Luxurious Libations, for example, the card's going to be fantastic. It's going to be Build Your Own Baneslayer. BYOB.
All right, so you heard it here first, everybody. Skycrier is Baneslayer Angel, Carl Chase.
As a content creator, it's all about the hot takes. You have to.
You got it. It's part of the contract. Another thing that I have noticed about this format, and I'm curious about if you feel this way too, is flyers feel extremely powerful in this format. And Skycrier has flying, so that would indicate why it's performing pretty well, because especially that blue-white flyers tempo deck seems extremely powerful to me.
Agreed. And that also makes a card like Echo Inspector, which is the 2/3 flyer for 4 that connives, so it can get up to 3/4, a huge just house. We've had past formats where 4-mana 3/3 flyers were kind of eh, and this is not exactly that because you're drawing and discarding, but man, that card is way, way better than I thought it would be, because it can just brick wall all these smaller flyers. There's not a ton of reach either.
And there seems to be a little bit of life gain going on with a lot of these flyers. like the speakeasy server, the 5-mana 3/3 gains you a life for each other creature you control. That works so well with flyers, because if you have a bunch of flyers, you're probably getting in free attacks every turn. And if you can just gain some life, you're just going to win the race.
Flyers almost always have worse stats than their non-flying counterparts. But if you've got just a little bit of life gain and the opponent doesn't have any ability to stop that, it sure makes that slightly smaller stats not matter nearly as much.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the other thing that threw me off, and this has gotten me not once, but I don't know, 10 times so far.
What's that?
Skycrier is a citizen. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe it's just that I'm not thinking about a bird as a citizen, right? Like, birds are flying around in the air. They're not citizens.
Well, in this fantastical universe, birds have to pay taxes, I guess.
The one that especially got me, to be honest, with Skycrier is like, all right, whatever, this bird's a citizen. But Obscura Initiate is a Windrake. Windrakes aren't citizens. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, and back to strategy, I think that citizens are the one creature type with the most synergy in this format. And there's just way more than I would have expected, just floating around, I guess. But the fact that Skycrier is a citizen synergizes really well with a bunch of other cards in the format. Namely, the best payoff for citizens is Darling of the Masses, the 2/4 for 2 green white that gives other citizens you control +1/+0. So right there, if you have Darling of the Masses, your Skycrier becomes a 2/1, making it excellent. That synergy there is definitely one reason to put the Crier in your deck.
Another one, and this is the one that keeps getting me, is Civil Servant, the green white 2/3 that you can tap a citizen to give it +1/+0 and lifelink. And that's where, like, they play Obscura Initiate. I'm like, Windrake, no problem. Then bam, tap it, lifelink and +1/+0 out of nowhere.
I have a bone to pick with Civil Servant, because I'm looking at the art here, Carl, and this looks like some kind of cat humanoid, but it just has this flowing, luscious haircut. Is this the weirdest art that we've seen in a while? It is making me unreasonably uncomfortable. Why does this cat have such beautiful flowing locks?
Together, we can build a safer, brighter new Capenna. I mean, clearly, it needs to give you a sense that it has its shit together. And how can it do that unless it's got a beautiful mop of hair?
Well, sign me up. I'm going to be voting for this Civil Servant, especially because it works out great with the Skycrier.
Well, Garrett, you go ahead and vote for Civil Servant. I'll be over here voting for Cabaretti Initiate, the raccoon citizen with 2 broken glass bottles in its hands.
I think that accurately sums both of us up. I love a cat with a do, and you love a raccoon that wants to stab people.
Nobody is messing with Cabaretti Initiate, okay?
I think we got to the heart of this dispute, Carl. Fabio the cat versus
Stabby McStabberton the raccoon.
Well, let's wrap all this up, Carl, in
closing arguments.
So, Garrett, I know that you were initially skeptical about the 2-mana 1/1, because that's, I mean, to be fair, that's a really good starting point, right?
Right, I think that's fair to start with skepticism on a card like this.
Have I convinced you to some extent, a la Greg Hatch with Dragonfly Suit style, to start considering Skycrier maybe a little bit more than you were otherwise considering it?
You have, and I think what it really underlines is one of our biggest points that we make so often is that cards are situational to the draft context in which they live. And Skycrier just seems to synergize with a lot of the other white cards, a lot of the other cards in this format, in order to get that extra power of toughness or just kind of get there. So I think that it will end up in some decks. I still think it's just not going to end up in very many of my decks. It's got to be pretty specific for me to want to include it.
You know, Garrett, I love beating the system. In today's limited, everybody knows that card advantage is a huge deal. And so, for all intents and purposes, when you've got a common, especially that gives you card advantage, they're going to be hotly contested cards. One way to get around the card advantage battle is to just do something that your opponent is not interacting with in a favorable fashion. And I can't tell you how many games I've already had where my opponent had more creatures with more stats than me, and I just played the Skycrier, buffed it like +4/+4, swung in for 5 lifelink damage, and it put the race choice out of a spot where my opponent could interact with it. To some extent, that's somewhat of a glass cannon, right? Because if they've got instant speed removal, they can blow you out. But it is another axis that you can play on that is not just fighting over resources every single turn.
I think that's fair enough. And I feel like Skycrier is one of the cards that could make this format interesting for a while. And I kind of wanted to end the episode on this note that we're really early in this format and I'm having a really good time. The first couple weeks of a format are always my favorite because it could be the worst format in the world after a month or so. But those first couple weeks, nobody knows what's good. Nobody knows what's bad. And it's a lot of fun to hang out with everybody and figure it all out.
Totally agree, Garrett. And if you've been following me on Twitter, you've already seen me complaining about bombs. But I think to some extent, that's just me being nervous about whether some super powerful rares have the potential to ruin what is otherwise, I think, a really interesting format to explore so far.
I strongly think so far we do not have another vow on our hands. There's going to be a lot more going on in this format.
Okay, I still hate Rabble Rousing though, and Jetmir. Screw those cards. But anyway, I do agree with you.
Well, that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can support the show at patreon.com/mysticaldispute. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards.
And I'm Carl Chase. You can find me at twitch.tv/2duckcubed.
Shout out to 17lands.com for the data. You can support them on Patreon as well. Until next time, stay chill.
Adios. You know, Garrett, I love beating the system.
We're just gonna leave it there.
Sorry, I started laughing before I could get to the point.
Stop having fun, Carl. This is work.